While you were hard at work,
I've been working on the railroad.
So were we, compiling the day's biggest news stories that matter most to you in a neat little one-hour package. It's the KABC News Blitz.
6:06 the time. Talk Radio 790 KABC is the place. I'm Royal Oaks, your host for the News Blitz, Monday through Friday, 6 to 7 p.m. Thanks for tuning in. We like to stuff the day's biggest and most infuriating or weird or hilarious stories into a single hour. So every day, I'm making a promise to you. You're going to hear at least three stories that will shock and amaze you. So let's get it on. In a minute, we'll be joined by Jim Murray, chief correspondent of Inside Edition, to talk about the writers and actors strikes. When will your stories return? Of course, I'm using the word story in Broadway. So, secondly, Mayor Bass, she's got some brass. Mayor Bass wants to shut down the Marina Freeway and turn it into a giant homeless encampment. Kind of Disneyland for the homeless, only without the Autopia ride. There's Debate Palooza coming up, DeSantis and Newsom in November, the GOP minus Donald Trump tomorrow at the Reagan Library. But will you be watching a debate that doesn't include the front runners, either one of them? And finally, the Democrats are eating their young. Well, maybe they're middle-aged. I guess he's sort of middle-aged, this Bob Menendez guy. They want New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez out of there for all the wrong reasons. And later in the show, Biden is melting down fast. He made some really controversial comments about LL Cool J, and he's lost the ability to read letters off of a teleprompter. I don't mean big fancy words. I mean individual letters. So with that in the books, let's turn to our friend Jim Murray. He is chief correspondent with Inside Edition. Jim, it is always a pleasure to have you on the show. Welcome to KABC.
I'm thrilled to be with you, Royal. Listen, with a news blitz in 1 hour, does that mean I have to speak really fast?
Yeah, don't you have some auctioneer training?
I always feel compelled to stand when I talk to you. I don't know why, because whenever I interview you, we're standing. So hold on, I'm standing right now. I just want you to paint it. I wanted to paint a picture.
Well, thank you. It's more comfortable that way. You know, seriously, Jim, I had a bad back for decades. I went to a standing desk about 7 or 8 years ago. Overnight, my back cleared up, and I basically haven't had a problem since then. So, yeah, standing's great, and you being a TV correspondent, you don't sit around a whole lot. I mean, I think when you interviewed Stormy Daniels, you sat down. So I got to tell you, it's so exciting to have you on the first week. I was just delighted to get the assignment to be hosting News Blitz, and so here you are. And I got to share something with you. It's very reassuring to me. You know how when you start a new show, well, you don't know because you're always perfect, but I know I'm just going to suck and nobody's going to listen because of that fact. But here's the deal. I told a dopey joke yesterday, Jim. And the exact same joke, word for word, this morning came out of the mouth of a nationally syndicated radio talk show host who shall remain nameless. So here's the deal. It was a story about Bob Menendez.
You, obviously. Okay.
Well, I don't know. I don't want to jump to conclusions, Jim. But anyway, there was this, Bob Menendez, the indicted senator from New Jersey. He said his excuse for keeping gold bars and $500,000 in cash in his sock drawer was, well, his family's from Cuba, and down there the government was so mean they'd confiscate your bank account, and so he didn't trust the banks, right? So to be really clever, Jim, yesterday I said, hey, Bob Menendez, when you look out your window there in Washington, you see cherry blossoms, right? You don't see Havana palm trees waving in the breeze, and you don't see the ghost of Fidel Castro cleaning out your safe deposit box. That was my dopey joke, okay? So this host...
Well, that's pretty specific.
Yes, it was. And wait, there's more. This host, who shall remain nameless, as I say, this morning said, what is Bob Menendez afraid of? The ghost of Fidel Castro is going to come back and steal his bank account? Now, I have to say, I took it as a real compliment. I take it as a complete endorsement of my first day effort. Now, you're a trained mathematician, Jim Murray. What are the odds this guy came up with that himself?
Hold on, I'm writing down the exact words, the ghost of, because I'm seeing people in an hour and need to be able to tell this joke as if it's my own. I would say that it's infinitesimal. They stole your joke. That's what I'm going to say. And given the fact that there's a writer strike is now over, I think you should sue because that was your original material.
I notice when you, chief correspondent for Inside Edition, are on television, you don't use words like infinitesimal, okay? So apparently,
no, I don't.
You change things up for radio. Is that right?
I talk for TV. It's small.
That's right. Well, I got to say, you get some credit, Jim, for me getting this gig. You know how that is?
How? I don't have any idea.
For years, I set out a demo tape, and it prominently featured an interview with you. You were okay, but I think my questions were so clever, I put them in the sizzle reel, right? You know, I'd start giggling every time I heard them. I was turned down for about 8 years, Jim. And then a few months ago, I spilled a Dr. Pepper on the tape. I had to make a new one, and it didn't have your interview. They hired me that day. They hired me that day, Jim. I have no explanation, but I think I have you to thank.
Apparently so. I feel so honored. I will take great pride. That's funny. I've been getting calls for the last 8 years. People kept saying they saw me on your tape and they wanted to hire me and I wasn't available. But now I understand why the phone stopped ringing.
Well, see, what goes around comes around. And I don't even know what that
exactly.
means. So we're talking to Jim Murray, chief correspondent of Inside Edition. I think I mentioned that, author of The Last Day of My Life. You can get it at Amazon. So I want to get your take. Jim, you know everything about showbiz. You're a trained lawyer, and strike is sort of half over now. I really want to get your take on the situation. I mean, the gains for the writers seem pretty huge, but, you know, there's a big negative impact on their lives, their careers, their financial situations. And so, some people are asking the question, was it really worth it to the extent it's even over? What do you think people in the business are thinking about that?
I think if you talk to the writers, they will say it was worth it, and I'll tell you why. Because you're really looking at future-proofing your job and protecting your job. When we were talking about streaming services, there had been no incentives given to writers to have a successful show on streaming because the metrics, the numbers were all kept secret, basically.
Right.
So you'd never know if something was a huge success on Netflix, you wouldn't get paid any more than if it was a bomb. And also the artificial intelligence specter looming over everything. I think the writers needed to know a couple of things. They needed to know that they would have, if they had, a longer season, that they would have a guaranteed number of writers in the room, that there would be shorter time periods between seasons, so you could actually carve out a career instead of being a gig employee. You needed to know that if a show did well in streaming, you would get paid more, and you needed some safeguard against artificial intelligence taking your job. And you also needed some pay increases. And I think I'm not sure about the length of the season and the time between seasons because I'm still reading a summary. It just came out a few minutes ago, actually. When they booked me to talk about this, I should have known that you were involved. So the news would break moments before I came on the air, and I would know nothing about it.
We wanted it to be improvisational, not planned,
exactly,
not canned.
I mean, if you look at the numbers, the writers will say their package is worth $230-some-odd million versus the $89 or $86 million that they were offered. That's a huge difference between those two numbers. But I think if you look at streaming, if you look at residuals, if you look at AI, those were the real big sticking points. And frankly, those remain the sticking points with the Screen Actors Guild and AFTRA. And I think that what's to be seen is how that union will be able to negotiate with the producers.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of leads into the other thought I had. I mean, I'm wondering if this settlement is likely to be like a template for resolving the actor strike, because this AI issue, I mean, it could be even thornier for the actors because the technology to digitally reproduce a person's voice and likeness, it's already out there and it's getting better all the time.
I don't even know if I'm talking to Royal. This could be AI that I'm talking to. And I say that in jest, but the reality is, Royal, they could take our voices, yours and mine, and recreate them very easily. And somebody could be typing into a keyboard, and our voices would come out. Now, you wouldn't have the wit that the real Royal has and the insight that you have, but it would be pretty close.
You know, there is a commandment that says you shouldn't lie. You're aware of that biblical reference?
You're going to hear that joke tomorrow on another radio show.
Probably. You know, I was reading a Gallup poll, Jim, that said the public supports the writers over the studio executives by 72% to 19%. And I'm thinking, why is that? I mean, is it? I guess the public is always sympathetic to people who strike and want more money and better conditions. I don't know if they're all for the auto workers who want a 4-day week and a 40% raise. That seems a little over the top. I mean, I've never applied lug nuts to Ford Explorers in Detroit, but, you know, it must be pretty onerous. But doesn't that seem, I wouldn't think it'd be 72 to 19 for those folks.
I think there are a lot of factors here. And if you look at the auto workers, they will say, this is their position, that they gave a number of concessions a dozen years ago when the automakers were in dire straits and they were bailed out, and they want some of that back now. And you look at some of the CEOs who make $30 million and up a year. You know, when you had a CEO making 8 to 10 times what a worker made, that's one thing. When they make 2 and 3 and 400 times or more what a worker makes, that's another. And I think you see that with the studios, and the writers are the creators and the actors are the performers. And yes, people at the top are making a fortune, and I don't think anybody necessarily begrudges that. But when you just talk about the rank and file writers and actors and so forth, you want to be able to have a career and make a living and live this American dream, even a modest one. And I think that many of these folks felt threatened and that their future was on the line. So I think that's why a lot of people have been supporting the riders. And frankly, I think a lot of people will be supporting the people on the lines of the auto companies.
Right. Now, I guess I'm wondering if it's maybe possible that the fight against AI is a losing battle, because as adamant as actors and writers are, isn't it kind of like trying to hold back the tide? I mean, like, again, auto workers before the assembly lines tried to stop Ford Motor Company from using an assembly line. I mean, it seems like there's an irony in that people support strikers because the public also appreciates technology and improvements in automation, right, and lower prices. So do we really want to try to stop AI?
Imagine this scenario. Let's say you're an extra and you work just a handful of days and you go to a movie set and they take your image and they say, here, you know, we normally pay you $180, we'll pay you $220, but for that extra $40, we own your likeness, so we can use you in any movie that our studio creates.
Right.
And then they own your image in perpetuity. Well, you're talking about an existential threat to your ability to work in that field again. And I think that AI, as cool as it is and as fun as it is a threat in a very real sense to certain careers. And I think that to the extent you can protect yourself, I think that these unions are trying to do that for their members.
Yeah, I think you're right. We're talking to Jim Morais, a chief correspondent for Inside Edition. I want to stick with this AI thing because it's kind of fascinating to me. I want to talk about a specific example. You remember the TV show Mad Men, starring, sure, you know, John Hamm as Don Draper, and Elizabeth Moss was Peggy. You may recall, Jim, that Don spent about half of his time on the show barking at poor Peggy, come up with 50 funny taglines and headlines and catchphrases in the morning. I'm going to go drink a lot of alcohol and sleep with somebody who's not my wife. That was the show, right?
Right.
So he'd spend, poor Peggy would spend all night coming up with 20 or 30 lame ideas, and, you know, two or three would be decent. I experimented a month or so ago, Jim. I asked ChatGPT to come up with catchphrases and clever titles for some legal stories. I was putting together a deal for the internet. And I'm telling you, within less than a second, I had about 35 really good catchphrases, titles, headlines, and it was a remarkable list. And of course, you know, you improve on it, hopefully. But I mean, isn't that the kind of thing in show business? Maybe it's premature to embrace AI, and obviously, writers don't want the head of 20th Century Fox talking into his computer, hey, ChatGPT, crank out a screenplay on the following concept, and now he has to pay a fourth of what he was going to pay for writers. But apart from some of those examples in show business, don't you think AI is just going to, whether it kills us or not, I don't know. I don't know if it's an existential threat, but it sure seems like it can do a whole lot of good in the meantime before it decides to kill us.
So if you're a writer and a studio or a producer decides to use AI to come up with a catchy phrase or a new twist ending to their sitcom or drama, who owns that? The studio. Therefore, there's no residuals. There's no first-time payment. The ownership rights go away.
Right.
I think it's a broader conversation. I agree with you. I think there are tremendous value. There's a great value in ChatGPT. The writers will say that many of the ideas that come from ChatGPT are based upon algorithms and works of prior writers that are being reviewed by the computer. So whose work are you really basing all of this on? It's just murky. Look, I don't pretend to know the answer. I really don't. I feel that I could be replaced just as easily as a lot of the writers. You could take my voice and have them voice over a news report, and nobody would know the difference.
Jim, there's a certain je ne sais quoi, a certain pizzazz you have that just couldn't be replaced by some computer.
I really appreciate that. The $5 is in the mail.
Thank you. You've introduced me to Mr. Lincoln. All right, Jim Murray, chief correspondent for Inside Edition. As it happens, this show's 6 to 7. Your show is on at 7 o'clock, Channel 2. Now, of course, the thing to do, Jim, is to VCR that, if there's such a thing as a VCR anymore, and then continue listening to KBC Radio. But
I would do that.
There's that option, yeah, to see Jim Murray.
And I made sure that the station put you on right before Inside Edition, so neither of us would be upset if the other was being viewed or listened to at the expense of the other.
What a great deal. Thank you for sharing your thoughts, Jim.